Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for being here again with us on Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our co-host, Professor A.J. Lowe.
Whoop. Hello.
What? What? I was like, what you got to say? Okay, and so we're delighted to be joined with friend of the show and a good sparring partner sometimes for Professor Lowe, which I personally enjoy. Educator and founder of Dreams KC, Katina Taylor. Welcome to the table again, Katina.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah.
I want to start off by sharing with everyone how this show came about. Katina, who is, as I said, a friend to the show, she texted me and just asked me, had I heard about her, had I done anything in regards to the women, black women, who have been murdered by the hands of police and have actually gone unreported. And so, in true Katina fashion, she had been doing her own research, and she shared links and information with me that was very disheartening and alarming, and that I hadn't been aware of, nor had people that I know been aware of. And so we named this show in honor of the Say Her Name campaign. And something I'll start off that was initially alarming for me, and then Katina, we'll let you just take it from here, was that you told me that for every one black man that gets killed by the police, there are actually two black women.
Absolutely.
That are killed by the police. And we would not know that by looking at the news or listening to, I mean, you just wouldn't know, not that it was double, like that was the thing that I was really alarmed about, that it was that rate, and then we don't really hear it.
Well, right. And not only that, it's for every man who has made the news. Mm-hmm. So the George Floyds, the Trayvon Martins, mm-hmm. the Freddie Grays, you know, all of those names that we do know.
Mm-hmm.
In between each of those, and there's an actual infographic that I've posted on my page and some other pages, is that two women mm-hmm. for every one of those. So think about the men that haven't been reported that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And then also think about the women whose names we haven't heard or don't know about, even more so, you know, than the ones that are now coming to light with Breonna Taylor and things like that. So mm-hmm. it is unfortunate that we consistently chant that Black Lives Matter, but we're not having a conversation about the women that are being, and not just murdered by the police, but they're being raped, they're being sexually assaulted, they're being beaten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, what happened with you doing your, like, how did you come to find out about this?
So, I have to definitely give a shout out to a good friend of mine, a colleague, a brother. His name is Dante Goodwin. And mm-hmm. so, we do a lot of work together in the field of education.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, do you know Kimberly Crenshaw?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that name sounds familiar, but why would I know her?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you need to check out her TED Talk.
Mm.
And so she's done a profound, profound TED Talk where she challenges her audience, and she starts them all out by standing up.
Yeah.
And calling out the names of the black men who have been murdered at the hands of the police. And she tells the audience to remain standing when those names are called. And then when she shifts and says, keep standing as I call these other names, and if you don't know them, sit down. And mm-hmm. immediately, as she starts calling the names of the women, the audience sits down.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, that line or the conversation that we've been having about black women being the most disrespected,
mm-hmm.
silenced, and invisible,
mm-hmm.
it's made real.
Yeah.
So the work of Kimberly Crenshaw, her team at the African American Policy Forum, and all of her work in regards to intersectionality is what brought it to my attention. And I said, how can I continue to have a conversation about Black Lives Matter, and I'm not talking about women that look like me or my
yeah.
mother?
And then you just, like you said, you just don't know. I mean, you don't know until you know, until somebody, as you share with me and somebody share with you,
yeah.
and then we pass on the information. I want to give people an opportunity to call in with questions or comments at 816-931-5534. Again, 816-931-5534. And Katina, so the African American Policy Institute or Forum, mm-hmm. African American Policy Forum, They something that was shared on there is when I was looking on their site, and we do have the link to that on our page at kkfi.org. If you look under Ebony's Bones, there's a hyperlink under Say Her Name.
Wonderful.
And you're able to go directly there, for so you will be able to see that with this show. But one of the things that they pointed out too is that it's women and girls,
yes,
who have been killed by the police. And the age range is young as 7 and old as 93.
Yeah.
Now, that was another thing that I was like, what?
Your grandmother. Now,
yeah, I said, that's my niece. And it could be my niece and my grandmother.
Yes. Absolutely, it's terrible.
I mean, let me say, in case my grandmother's listening, she is not 93. I'm just let me. She's no, not. Sure. She's not it's 93. True. She's not near 90. She okay.
But it makes a yes. point. It's Big Mama, and yes. we all know a Big Mama, right? Mm-hmm. In our community, in our homes, our families. And so, reading one of the stories of the older Black women, police kicked into her door, much like the story of Breonna Taylor. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of all of that chaos and confusion, she mm-hmm. had a heart attack.
I heard about that.
Yeah. And so, you know, people say, well, they didn't shoot her. Well, I didn't know that that was the only way to die.
Right.
And it was still a but-for analysis. But-for they not kicking into her home, these no-knock warrants and all those types of things, which we have consistently seen them implement them in the wrong way and cause more harm than doing good, then now you have a senior citizen, a Big Mom in our community that is no longer with us, and then you have as young as 7 years old as well.
Right. Yeah. I think if I want to say that that's the same case that was used in Michelle Alexander used in her book when she was talking about SWAT team use.
And what book are you referring
styles.
To?
The New Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
When she was talking about SWAT team and military style arrests in the Black community, where you have white collar crimes that happen where people steal millions of dollars and they're able to be escorted out and they escape the shame of being arrested in front of their family and peers. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, on the opposite side of town, you have people kicking in doors like they are in Fallujah or in Iraq, and like you said, having people have heart attacks.
Yeah, it's scary. It's a scary existence, but it goes back to the saying that our bodies have always not been our own. That people seek to control us, to silence us, to make us invisible, so that they maintain power and control. And but the mark of any society is how we treat our young and how we treat the women.
Yeah.
And if we don't treat the women well, then the actual society ceases to exist, because we are the givers of life. And so we have to have this conversation. And it's a conversation that we have to have with our brothers as well. Like, it's real talk. And this is not about who gets killed the most. You know, you hear people often having conversations about degrees of sin. It's not, oh, it's more important that we discuss the Black men versus the Black women. No, we all are being murdered at the hands of the police and suffering brutality, rape, sexual assault. And that's just those cisgendered conversations. What we also have to have is conversations around our trans community, because those are definitely underreported cases, and they are suffering at even a
greater
higher degree because of the way in which they find themselves, because as a society we have not yet been able to comprehend, embrace, accept, however you want to say it, that lifestyle, that choice, some people say, or whatever, but at the end of the day, they're human beings.
They're still
our brothers and sisters, and we got to have that as part of the conversation as well, whether it makes us uncomfortable or not. But understanding that that uncomfortableness is where our growth is going to occur, and until we're completely unified as a people, we can't address the issue.
With the work for the African American Policy Forum, have they seen any change since they have been doing vigils, I think, as well, in New York City, and just the work that they've put out, report, you know, at least one report I know that I've seen, has any change been implemented based on them making this more aware, making people aware of what's going on with Black women and girls?
And I'm assuming you mean a decrease in the number of women maybe that are dying. No,
Yeah.
Just like there have been no decreases in the deaths of black men or decreases in the number of transgender people that are being murdered at the hands of the police in the general communities. No, we haven't seen a decline. And we haven't seen a decline because we still aren't looked at as human beings. Our bodies are not respected. And we you know, the bias still exists. White supremacist culture still exists. We're not doing anti-racist work. That's just the bottom line. And we've been socialized to believe that women have less value in a society. And we see that.
And what's, oh, Katina, okay, not that, I'm not trying to turn you into a psychologist here, but.
Because I am not.
But just, even just us just having this as we do here, just a flat out conversation about it. Sometimes, what I feel some struggle with is, for instance, we could talk to Professor Law, who's a black man. He has a shirt that says protect the black woman. I mean, different people that you know, my brother, my, you know, just family members, they say, no, you know, we love y'all and we respect y'all and this, that, and the other. But somewhere there is a disconnect between those words and the factual statistical data of what is actually going on.
So my mind was blown yesterday. I'm a part of a book club. Shout out to Sankofa Book Study Circle. And so we met last night. And as a part of our conversation, just so happened we're talking about male-female relationships, actually. Mm-hmm. And one of the elders in the group said to us, let's take a trip back to and give some historical perspective on this conversation. Oftentimes in our community, in our homes, I know that I dealt with it in regards to my own dad, is that we cry out for being to be a bit more emotionally available to us, tapped into this connection with us. And what he shared with me is during the time of chattel slavery, it was used against the men to show any type of care or concern for their wives or their children, because the harm would come to them in order to manipulate him and make him do what needed to be done or what the master thought he should be doing. And so in an answer to that, as a reply to that, then if I disconnect, I'm actually protecting my family. That then changes the total physiological, neurological DNA for generations. And he pointed out, you were in chattel slavery much longer than you've ever had any type of idea of freedom. So now you have to unlearn that.
So actually being taught that if you disconnect emotionally, you're protecting us. Go ahead, Professor Lowe. I know you
Definitely, I can see that. Although there really was no blueprint to what slavery was, so it wasn't the same everywhere, but I could definitely see that, especially because the marriage wasn't respected. It wasn't respected by law. I mean, it could be respected on the plantation depending on who the slave owner was, but for the most part, it wasn't respected. So, yeah.
But just knowing you care about someone, that was leverage for a slave master to get what they needed from you.
Now, what could possibly happen more than likely was that your family member's going to get sold.
Yeah.
That was the major scare, as opposed to whatever could possibly happen on the plantation. At least I have you here. But when you start looking at people and saying, okay, well, if you don't do this, then we're going to have to sell your daughter. Now, those were possibilities as well. Those are very real.
Yeah, absolutely. And some men,
and that dictated
actually,
behavior.
They didn't mind necessarily being on a different plantation because then they didn't have to see what would happen to their children or the women that they cared about. And so out of sight, kind of out of mind, less that trauma, basically. So then that's further disconnect, because now not only am I emotionally disconnected, I'm physically. And when I think about conversations I've had with so many women, and they say that the men, their dads, their uncles, their grandfathers, whoever, were emotionally unavailable and physically unavailable. And then, like, when he brought that, I was just like, Yeah. Because we talk about people being able to do the best they can with the tools they have, but we never actually ask the question of why weren't the tools in the toolbox to begin yeah. with.
I want to stop again and let people know you can give us a call here at the station. If you just tuned in, this is Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our co-host, Professor A.J. Lowe, and we're in studio with educator and founder of Dreams Consulting, Katina Taylor. Today's show is Say Her Name in honor of the black women who have been, women and girls, who have been killed at the hands of police, double the rate that we see with black men, who we see all over the media right now, as far as the campaign is going on and things that are, which I'm glad to see, you know, changes in people paying attention to certain things. But when we look at that narrative of, I don't know who's accredited for with saying this, you may know, Katina, but the further you get away from the white Christian male, that's how you, the more you experience white supremacy. Like, mm-hmm. you start out there,
yeah.
and if you're not white, if you're not a male, if you're not a Christian,
yeah.
then, you know, you experience more and more and more of it, however far on the other end of that spectrum
yeah,
you are.
Absolutely.
You can give us a call in with questions or comments. If you've heard of what's going on with the black women and the police killings, if you have not, feel free to give us a call and join the conversation at 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534.
Well, one of the things that I've noticed, especially in regards to Breonna Taylor, is that nobody's like, that is being skipped over. But then again, the question is, who's controlling the narrative, though?
Absolutely.
So, I mean, because if black people aren't controlling the narrative, because one of the things I noticed over the last couple of years with the revived feminist movement, with the Me Too movement, mm-hmm. One of the things that I've noticed is that African-American women have been stepping off of the Me Too movement mm-hmm. because of their lack of either expression or understanding for the racial aspect.
Even though it was started by a black woman.
Right. So... Right.
Which no. didn't get the credit initially.
Exactly.
Let's be real about
now,
it.
Exactly. Now, that's why I wanted to put that out
historically,
there. That
historically, when you start talking about the feminist movement in itself, one of the things that it usually created a divide for the black community, because it almost pitted black men and black women against each other mm-hmm. and saying, well, your suffering is way more difficult than hers, or his is way more, and then we end up fighting amongst each other.
That. Right.
Right.
That degree. That's right. what I talk about when you talk about those degrees is suffering. Suffering is suffering. Right. Period.
Exactly. We do have a caller.
Awesome.
Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead, state your name, where you're calling from, and in your question or comment.
Yeah, my name is Walter, and I just want to make a quick comment about, we didn't have as much freedom on the plantation as people may think, or as much say so. So about the man being detached, they didn't come and ask you, and it wouldn't have mattered what you did or wouldn't do on the plantation. It's the master's decision to sell their mother, the child, the father, the brother, the sister, the aunt, the grandmother, whoever it was. It was a beastly, sadistic, cruel, beyond imagination system. And it wasn't anything that a black man or a black woman or a black child or a black parent or grandparent could do to prevent those kind of things from happening. So that part about being detached, I don't know if that's where it comes from, but it could well come from a place like that in our historical past, because even in African culture, I've lived in Ghana about 5 years and traveled a lot. And in certain African countries, I didn't learn this from being there, I've read it, I think. Certain African cultures, they don't even get attached to the baby until the baby is a certain age, 9 days old or something like that. They have a specified time period, even before they name the child, in certain cultures, because they don't know if the child's coming to stay. They don't know if the child's going to survive. So they don't get emotionally attached until they're confident that the child is going to survive beyond a certain date. And it's the same way with the slave thing. You know, you get attached and you get to love it real hard and attached to the people that you're supposed to be attached to, and then look up one day and they're gone. So it could be from that. And the black man was in a very vulnerable position. We all were. But we weren't able to protect our family. That's a real awful position to be in when you can't protect your wife, your children, and we couldn't. And so I can understand the detachment if it goes back to history. But it wasn't anything we did or didn't do on the plantation to prevent somebody being sold, beat, killed, murdered, burned alive, castrated, all that kind of, it was totally out of our control. So that's all I want to say.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you for listening and calling.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, and we're going to take a station break, and we'll be back after these messages. Hey, y'all, we're back here on Ebony's Bones on KKFI. Professor Lowe always does something over the break. But anyway, I know I'm just putting him out there. He can take it. This is Ebony's Bones. If you just tuned in, I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, along with co-host Professor A.J. Lowe, and we're in studio live with Katina Taylor, educator and founder of Dreams KC. We are talking about the Say Her Name campaign, which is all about the black women and girls who have been killed at alarming rates, even more so than what we've seen with the black males in media by the police.
I want to say something real fast based off of the last caller, because so since I've been teaching black history, well, I wouldn't even say that. I would say that when I was in grad school, the latter half of undergrad and graduate school, and they made us start really researching and understanding and reading slave narratives and understanding the culture of plantation life. What I realized is that black people, we think we know, but we really don't know.
We don't.
We really don't. We don't understand, like, you know, because I watch shows like the show I told you about. What is it? The black show on Netflix.
Black AF.
Yeah.
And I listen to him and his references of slavery, and I'm thinking to myself, like, you don't get any idea. Like, you know, you got to read them old books, like those old books, like Kenneth Stamps, when he wrote this book called The Peculiar Institution, which is one of those old school research studies done on plantation slavery that is not it's not contemporary. It's old school.
Yeah.
So it's telling you about what was going on in plantation life then. And you see how peculiar it is. You read books like Solomon Northrop. We don't really understand the impacts of slavery. Some of the things that we do right now, we are still like actively encouraging slave culture.
Yes, we absolutely are. But you don't know what you don't know. And I think that's what Ebony said earlier. So remember, again, what I said, that elder said we were enslaved much longer than we've had any notion of quote-unquote freedom, because I don't embrace that, because we are not yet free. We are free from chattel slavery. But there's been an evolution of the institution of slavery, for sure.
I will push back. The reason why I say that is because, I'm saying that the statement, the reason why I might take issue with the statement is when we start discussing who black people are. Because when we start looking at who we are outside of this continent, we've been free longer than we've been slaves.
In our total history. Yes.
In our total history.
I'm talking here on this continent. Yes. Yeah, now on this continent,
when you talk about
agree.
The African diaspora in totality, absolutely. But I'm talking about the people that are direct descendants, those of us here on this continent.
I would agree.
So geographically, we agree sometimes. Yes.
I just wanted to say that because one of the things that that I noticed, especially, like I said, in regards to teaching black history and black studies, is that in the textbooks, they usually start black history usually with
slavery. And we have had a total and complete existence beyond
before that.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, when you start understanding that how deep and rich
no one
African
exists without us.
History and culture is. Yeah, right. Homo sapiens come from Africa.
From an African woman. True. I mean, I just want to put that out
here. Hold on, wait. Let's just say this. I mean, I think we can all agree that all life comes from
an African woman. And the reason I'm saying that, to make that plain, is to take what we are talking about today,
make it relevant,
and that there is a woman who looked like Katina and I, who are the wombs of humanity. And here it is, we're having a conversation in the United States of America about why these black women and girls from our age range of 7 to 93 are being killed at twice the rate of black men by police. And virtually, you can talk to many people, I would venture to say, and they have no clue about that.
Yeah, they wouldn't know the name of Ayanna Stanley or, you know, Rekia Boyd. You know, they wouldn't know those names. And just like Breonna Taylor interestingly enough, the 7-year-old that we're talking about was killed in her bed as well.
Mm.
She was sleeping in her bed.
What happened?
Again, police entering the home, attempting to arrest someone. And think about this. I mean, you have to put this notion of being in your home. 1, 2, 3, 4 o'clock a.m. I'm doing what I do. I'm sleeping. If someone comes into my home and I don't know who they are, one, I'm jostled out of my sleep. I'm incoherent because it takes a moment to get your wits about yourself. And if I am going to try to protect my home because someone has entered, and then you act as if I am an aggressor and kill me.
Right.
Which is what we do sometimes when we go to war in other countries. And we want to go in there and steal and rape and pillage and kill. And then we come back home to the United States and they try to say, oh, now they're our enemies. Well, why? Because you wanted to do something to them that they didn't want you to do to them, rightfully so.
Absolutely.
And now we're going to go kill them so we can get what we want.
Yeah.
And like I said, you come into my house like that at 2 a.m. and startle me awake. You
are going to respond because all you know is someone that's unknown to you has entered your home. And so that was Breonna Taylor's fate. Her boyfriend or fiance was held for days as if they were going to bring an attempted murder charge.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you think about the castle doctrine. So let's talk about the law. I have the right to protect my castle. And that's exactly what he was doing. How is it that no communication happened with those particular police officers to not know that earlier that day the person they were attempting to apprehend had already been picked up?
I'll say this. The biggest, baddest gang in the United States is the Fraternal Order of Police.
And it's unfortunate. And I know tomorrow there'll be a conversation on KKFI about, you know, police unions. But we have to have these hard conversations. And be clear. I want us to be really, really clear that, and I was just with a group of police officers today. They cool. I don't have a problem. But I am not talking about individual officers per se. I am talking about this entire notion or institution and system of policing that has evolved from a slave catcher's mentality. And the people that often take those jobs, are we really doing right? Are we really looking at their psychological makeup? Why did you end up being a police officer? Many of them have some character flaws, some mental health things that didn't, you know, they were able to somehow get on these police forces. But anybody else would have been like, nah, we not having you. The level of control that they wanted to exert. Right. Over people is a problem.
Bill Maher said that the first question the cop should be asked in the psychological evaluation is how many times were you shoved in the locker?
Mm.
Which I thought was pretty profound.
Yeah.
I mean,
that bullying.
But this is something, this is not new. Like my psychology professor, Dr. Denard, used to say, you know this already. He said, when you listen to Malcolm. Right, Malcolm was talking about how the Ku Klux Klan had infiltrated the police force back in 1964. So it should not be new for us to find out that we got Klan members on the police force. I would not be surprised if there are Klan members on the police force in Parkville, Missouri right now. Especially because like less than 10 years ago, they were passing out flyers, actively passing out flyers for Klan membership in Parkville.
Wow.
So it's only 1 and 2 and 2 equals always is going to equal 4.
That's it.
So, I mean, it would not surprise me at all if you had a large group of Klan members on the law enforcement in Parkville, Missouri right now.
Yeah. There is an organization called Critical Resistance. Angela Davis is one person that was a part of the founding of that grassroots organization. They're based out of California. And I interviewed someone with that organization a couple of years ago. And one of they're about abolishing it, abolishing the police systems, because they're saying policing itself is the issue.
Of course.
And we keep trying to do all these other things around it. You know how we do that in our lives? You try to fix all the other stuff around it, but not the issue. And one of the things that they've helped us question is, like, who told you that you needed to be policed in the first place?
Again.
Who told you that you couldn't come together in community And what do you really need resolved? And look at it that way and understand that we have the connections and different resources that we need to resolve what's really going on. Yeah. But we have succumbed to the training of, we'll call the police, if you have an issue.
Remember who's dictating the narrative, though. Like, remember who's dictating the narrative is the people that feel safe when they call the police. Like, remember, I mean, one of the things that I find fascinating in America is we try to address issues without addressing the root problem. And usually the root problem in most of these issues stems from racism, right? So we can't discuss this if we can't discuss racism.
Yeah, I don't think any topic is devoid of it.
Not in America.
Not in the United States. We're built on it. I want to let people know you can call in and join the conversation at 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. Something for me, because it just cringes me when I feel as though that we talk about, and I know that, we don't exist in isolation. And so anytime we talk about ourselves, we're by nature talking about other people in life and, mm-hmm. and et cetera, because we're in concert together. But it just cringes me sometimes that we can have a tendency to adopt what's her name? The poet. They just did a documentary. She passed. I can see her face.
Maya?
No.
Bell Hooks? No.
No. Toni Morrison. Toni Morrison. Thank you. Thank you. I knew you had it. Of a documentary. But she said when she would write, to make sure that she wasn't writing from what she called the white glaze. Like, no, yes. I'm writing about me and my people and my family. And she said, even when you look at certain books and even the way that they title things, or even when she's asked questions as an author and they talk about the reader, she knew they were talking about the white reader.
Yes.
Or you're talking about, well, how does this work with white people? But it's like, no, I'm talking about me from my perspective, not yours.
Right.
Right.
And so one of the things for me is the more and more that we connect to who we are and not who somebody else said that we are.
That's it.
Yeah. We do have a caller on the line. Caller, thanks for calling in. Go ahead and state your name and your question or comment. You're on the air.
Thank you. This is John. I really appreciate the information about the deaths of black women. That was unknown to me. I follow the police killings, but I didn't realize that, so I appreciate that. I appreciate the professor's comment about Kenneth Stamp's book, which I read 30 years ago. Definitely interesting. And the journals of Nat Turner, too, were really interesting, too, to me back then. I just want to say that I really appreciate the connection with the international level, because as Dr. King fully understood at 39 years old, this is the most violent country on earth. And we are an imperial power, somewhat similar to the Roman Empire. And we have 800 military installations around the world for really no purpose that protects us. And Chalmers Johnson, in his trilogy, which the professor may know about, commented that empire eats itself out. It extends itself, and then it hollows itself out, which is what we're experiencing right now. And that's the problem with the economy, the socioeconomic, the racism, and everything else that's happening in this country. I'm just very happy to see white kids and black kids out there protesting and making noise, because I'm a kid from the 60s, and it's about damn time. Thank you. That's my comment. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Professor Lowe?
Yeah, no. What he was saying as far as how an empire eats itself, he is absolutely right. And one of the things I remind my students is that there is no empire or country that stays on top forever. We have seen and lived through the United States, or what we refer to as American exceptionalism, for the majority of our lives, and that is coming to an end. Not only that, you start to see how white America is responding to this idea of white exceptionalism. capitalism coming to an end with things like Confederate statutes coming down. Well, you know, which is fascinating to me being a historian, because I understand the perspective of those statutes. For anybody that doesn't know, those statutes were created and erected after Reconstruction. So once Reconstruction was over, it was white America's ability to try to put black people back in their place in certain areas by erecting Confederate statutes, by erecting busts of people like Nathan Bedford Forrest, who creates the Ku Klux Klan.
Right.
Right?
All right, we have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and go ahead with your question or comment.
My name is Kurt. Am I hear you're referring to?
Yes, you. Thanks for calling. Okay. Go ahead. You can go ahead.
I hear a lot about defunding the police, and what I don't hear enough about is, pardon me, but when Trump was doing his real estate thing, there was community lawyers that were in place from the 60s. They were funded by the federal government that took him to court and called him up. And what I'm referring to is black people can strategize just as intellectually as anybody else, but they need the funding. There's so many black female lawyers out there. They are struggling for money, trying to get political positions. But if we could defund the police and fund community lawyers groups and fund public defenders groups, we could take these white racist people and put them in their knees. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate that.
I agree with that.
It is a reallocation of funding that's needed. And we've always talked about that, like, right? But remember, people that seek to control or maintain control of others, it's because they fear what would happen to them if those that have been controlled for so long actually took on the mindset of them and became just as violent and oppressive as them. So they fear retribution. So to maintain control is to say, I don't want what I have visited upon you to be visited upon me.
True. And I mean, it's not pie, though. Like, it's not, more power for me doesn't equal less power for you.
Right.
Like, that's not, and that's what I feel like most people don't understand. It's not pie, right? And black people have always wanted equality. Luckily, we have never wanted revenge.
Yeah.
That's something that like, you see African Americans coming straight out of slavery. And for the first thing that they was trying to do is link up with their families. They weren't trying to get revenge. But like you said, that has always been in the white psyche. This idea that these black people are going to rise up. Remember, like, the Ku Klux Klan ended up creating itself based off of remembering the Confederacy, right?
Right.
But this idea that black people are going to run amok. So we got to make sure that we assert our dominance over them, and to make sure that they don't decide that they want to take revenge on us.
Absolutely.
Professor Lowe, I want you, and we are, for anyone who's just joined us, we're talking about the Say Her Name campaign, which was created by the African American Policy Forum, and it recognizes the black women and girls who have been killed at the hands of police at alarming rates from ages 7 to 93. That's our guest is Katina Taylor, educator and founder of Dreams Consulting, who we're grateful for making us aware of this information and being willing to come on the show and share her insights. We're going to take our last station break for the show, but please feel free to give us a call to join the conversation at 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534, and we'll be back after this. And we're back here on Ebony's Bones, and we're still talking about the Say Her Name campaign with our guest Katina Taylor. And both of you were saying something. I don't know who wanted to go, but no, over the break.
I do want to push back and just say that the Say Her Name issue, the inability for us to see the rates of black women who are beaten, sexually abused, raped, and killed at the hands of police authorities, it is not a campaign. A campaign's been created around it, but it is a movement to shift our conversations when we talk about Black Lives Matter, to understand that when we say that, we are not just talking about black men. And I really wanted to get that point across, because we have a shared experience.
Come on.
And as long as we negate that, then the voice of your mother, your sister, your daughter, your student, your neighbor, your lover, your spouse, they're invisible. And we can't be invisible if we're the ones giving life. Like, we are life givers. And I understand, of course, we understand the science of it. But my womb is needed to bring forth life. And if we're killing off our life force, if we're not including us in the conversation, we have a real problem.
Something that I do want, one of my sisters and I have been having this conversation about, when Malcolm X would say, you know, if you pay attention to the media, he was referring to the mainstream media, it'll have you thinking that the guilty person is innocent and the innocent person is guilty.
Yes.
And sometimes we've been struggling with, I don't know why we believe the media anyway, with as many lies, you know, that have been purported, and lack of information.
Our own media.
But I'm saying, even still to this day, it's just, we'll say, well, I saw it on the news, or well, and I'm not knocking people who are trying to accurately report, so that's not who I'm talking about. Or, but when you see one-sided things, something I was sharing with Professor Lowe a couple of weeks back is, when it does something to me to keep seeing, quit showing the, doing interviews with the black families or the black woman and say, oh, how do you feel? You know, such and such was murdered by the police and we're going to empathize with you. Why didn't you also reach out to the white person that killed that black person and talk to their family and ask them what they're, aren't, do they not feel a certain way, and how horrific does that make you feel that your family member or whomever that was that actually killed that black, because both things are
occurring. And stop categorizing the person who was murdered as a suspect.
Yes.
Versus a victim of murder.
Again, we're going back to who's dictating this narrative.
Absolutely.
But then it becomes our responsibility for what we're allowing to take in.
This is where we get to. We get into another issue with us. Because remember that we did, at one point in time, black people had their own television outlet and the gentleman sold it in order to make money.
Okay, but we're even saying that. But how many of us still would rather watch a mainstream television news and say, okay, I believe them, it's factual? There are different outlets that you can choose to go to.
Because we've been conditioned to believe, right, what is given to us by our masters, our oppressors.
You have to
deconstruct that. It's that ISIS colder mentality, right?
And the one time, Professor Lowe, we've had this conversation before, where it doesn't, sometimes I think we can say, well, I kind of watch it to stay informed, or I kind of, you know, whatever. But if somebody is feeding you lies, that's not informed. That's not information.
No.
And if someone has a history of feeding me lies, then I need to have the wisdom to say, I can't listen to you anymore, because I know anything that you're reporting is based on the narrative that you want to continue to purport.
Understood.
And it doesn't matter. I want to say this one last thing. It doesn't matter if you say, well, I know better than that. If somebody keeps playing a song over and over in a room, I hate that song, at some point, I am going to sing it.
Yeah.
That's what matters.
It
doesn't matter that, well, I'm intellectually capable of knowing that they're lying, or
conditioning
or
is
this,
real.
This, that, and the other. No. Anybody, this, you don't have to ask anybody this. You can know this in the truth of your own being. If you sit at home and play a song over and over again that you hate, you are going to sing it.
Understood.
Eventually.
But at the same time, well, to say that, okay, well, the news is lying, therefore I'm not going to watch it, which means that now where are you getting your information from? If everybody's lying, where are you going to get your information
from? The same way that Katina got the information about the Say Her Name movement. The same way that you've gotten information from, and then now we're all connected through the internet, so you can share directly
people. What I'm saying is that when it comes to information, the internet sometimes isn't the best source
either. You didn't hear me say the internet. I'm saying, for instance, I'm just using this as an example because that's how information is shared and spread. Katina came to me with this information. I didn't see it on the news.
Understood.
I didn't see it somewhere else, but that still doesn't negate. Why would I still say, well, where am I going to get my news from? Well, it's
a question of validity of what I brought you, because mainstream media didn't give it to you.
Yes.
Okay. Well, hold on. First,
you with two women, you're not gonna win.
That doesn't mean I'm not gonna try. No, what I'm saying is that I don't believe Fox News. I don't believe a word that Fox News says. But I still watch Fox News.
Well, why? The art of war dictates that you do that.
Because I have to do that. I feel like even though when it comes to liberal white Americans, which I find which are the most, for me, damaging. The most dangerous, is the most dangerous people in this country are white Americans that don't believe that they're racist, even though they are racist AF. So, I say that to say that even with that, like watching a CNN or MSNBC still gives me an understanding of what they're saying. But I still know, okay, well, like you said, we're not talking about any of these women, right?
Yeah.
Who's dictating the narrative?
I'm just saying that I'm not saying that people don't have... You can do whatever you want to do, obviously, but I'm just saying that understand that it affects us. Understand that scientifically, you have shared this on this show, Professor Law, how our brain processes in images. I was listening to some other talk, and they were just saying how, you know, the brain takes in stuff and then it projects more of what it sees.
Yes.
So I don't care if you're saying, well, whatever, the body is always honest. No matter what lies we tell to ourselves, the body is always honest.
Yes.
And I can't keep taking in something and not thinking that what I'm taking in is not then also being automatically projected.
That's right.
I hear you.
Because that's what I'm taking in.
It just does. Yeah. And so, and because we're not, because here's the thing. When we think about women, when we think about children, for instance, and my heart goes out to the four-year-old legend who was murdered on Monday. When we, the city was an outcry that we hadn't been hearing or seeing before. It's because of the way in which we endear ourselves to our children. And it used to be the same way in which we cared about, loved on, and appreciated and respected women. The media cannot... put those images out there because the level of we would have reached the level of outrage far sooner if we repetitively were seeing videos of women and children being murdered versus men. Because we think about men going off to war and dying and, you know, they're strung, all of that. But you start talking about the least among you, women and children, those videos showing up constantly and consistently. Then the fear of a race war might be really a reality. Because people are going to stand, they see their mothers, they see their daughters, they see those babies in that way. And so I think there is a method to why we're not seeing and hearing these stories, because they understand the impact that it would have had on people far sooner.
And Katina, so again, for me, that speaks to that. For me, this... the decision about what we give our attention to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are, there's a lot in social media. Okay, you start giving your support to black businesses, start giving your support here, start giving your support here. The greatest support that you give to anybody is your very presence and your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And children teach us that. That the greatest thing that you have is you, your very presence.
Yes.
And that's what I mean about us being able to take in with ourselves and say, what am I giving my attention? What am I giving me
to? It's just like
the
food.
Yes.
It's just like the food.
What am I giving my presence to? My presence is the most valuable thing that I have to offer.
Yes.
So what is it that I'm giving my attention, my energy, and my presence to? Because whatever that is, that's what I'm allowing to grow. That's what I'm feeding. That's what I'm giving more to. And even, and instead of saying, well, we don't have this or we don't have that, maybe not in that shape and form, but how else do we network and have it? How do we share information? We share a lot of information that's never seen on mainstream TV. But we find out about it because we tell each other.
Yeah, we're griots.
Yeah, yes. Thank you. We tell each other. We inform each other. If something goes on, break it down to the family unit. If something goes on in the family... we know what's going to be on the front news page for the family. It's such and such did whoever the you know call
and you
grandma
know who takes
call,
the news within the family.
Who's going to do? You know what I mean?
Yes.
We seek to inform each other about what we need to know about. about what matters to us, and we still have that capability.
Absolutely.
To do so. I want to give people an opportunity to call in. We have just a few more minutes before we end the show. We are talking with educator and founder of Dreams Consulting, Katina Taylor, about Say Her Name, the young black women and the women and girls of black women who've been killed at the hands of police that are not being, or are being underreported, let me say that. Feel free to give us a call here at 816-931-5534. Again, that's 816-931-5534. Katina, you spoke to me about, I want to make sure I get this right, you spoke to me about the desire for yourself to do a vigil for just honoring the lives of these women who, again, the age ranges of these police killings have been as young as 7 and as old as 93, which in and of itself, that it's mind-blowing. I don't know, that I can't even really process that right now. But talk to us about the importance of holding vigils and how that helps, or what purpose that can really serve in some of these detrimental situations.
Yeah, so let me first just be honest. People that know me would tell you I'm not a person that attends, supports, really likes to call them vigils. Because I think after, generally we say prayer vigils, right? And so I believe the faith without works is dead, period. There has to be some action after the prayer. And so, but I know that that's a term that we all know what that means. It's a gathering of to honor or bring awareness. So I use that term very loosely. But the importance is this. One, we have to know what we don't know. So for me as an educator, I'm always seeking to educate others. And so I look for opportunities, formats, vehicles to do that. So when this came up, I immediately said, we have to do something to bring awareness, to raise awareness. Because while we're talking about police violence, again, we can't leave women out of the conversation. And we can't ignore the fact that women and girls are targets. I posted on your page, I posted on my page videos of women being brutalized at the hands of police. Some women, and one that was the most, it just did something to my soul, was a woman that called the police herself because she knew she was in a mental health crisis. And when the video starts, it's after she's been taken to a precinct, not getting the help she needs. She's naked. 12 officers, 12 dudes, probably. Men, pulling her by her hair. Putting something over her face, binding her hands, tasering her multiple times, and she died. But her words when they first opened the door to her cell was, remember, you all promised not to kill me. And they killed her anyway. The little girl that was at the swimming pool in her bathing suit, and a male police officer is dragging her across the ground. Those are the images that stick in my mind. That's why this work is important. I have a granddaughter. I have nieces. I have students. I am a woman. To see a video of a man beating a woman in her face during a traffic stop, it's something about the idea of them pulling us by our hair, our crown. And you see that repeatedly as well. Like, we have to be informed. We have to engage in a real way. And we have to understand that all of us are part of what is happening, this racial violence. And we can't be left out of the conversation. We can't just say we're upholding and lifting up our brothers when we're being brutalized as well.
And that our Facebook page for the show is Ebony's Bones, EBONYSBONES. And Katina, yours, is it Katina K. Taylor on Facebook?
Yes.
C-A-T-I-N-A.
Yes.
Katina K. Taylor on Facebook. And also, for more information, people can look at the African American Policy Forum. You can go on their website. On our, we have a link to their website on our KKFI page. So if you go to kkfi.org and look for the Ebony's Bones Show, there's a hyperlink to Say Her Name, and you can find out more information there. Katina, in the final minute, is there something else that you want to share that you haven't shared to leave us with, or any other information that you'd just like us to know on this topic?
I think we just have to understand and realize that women are not immune to white supremacist violence. When you think about Dylan Ruth going into the church and shooting the people, there were 9 victims. What we don't know is that 6 of those were women, the oldest being 83 years old. Women used to be protected in community. It was a hands-off type of situation. Black women really haven't had that luxury for quite some time. And so we have to have real conversation again about it. I just encourage people to understand that when you look in the eyes of your daughter, I remember a quote, when you look in the eyes of the face of those you love, you are seeing your supreme being, your creator. Mm-hmm. See us as that. And make sure that we're not kept out of the conversation and thought of as invisible or silenced. That just can't continue to happen if all Black lives matter. That's all it is.
Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention, as you do, Katina. And you're always welcomed here, of course, with more information. Oh, my goodness. We have one caller. I'm going to put you on, but you got to talk in 10 seconds. Because we got to scoot. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead with your name or com. Turn your background down. We can hear feedback. But all right, sir, you got 10 seconds. If you don't,
yeah, hello.
All right, go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah. Hey, my name is Vernon Mitchell. I'm enjoying the program. I got 18 people in my family. I got 9 sisters. My daddy told us, you better not touch one of those girls. I never forget that in my life. I respect all women, Black or white. I respect all women. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you for listening. Everybody take care and stay tuned for American Roots with Nick Spritzer. And then later we'll have the Classical Challenge. Have a good evening, everybody. And just continue to let's take care of ourselves.